Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Trotten's been raining off my cup. Pink via deck, my boss is the kleine Fahrdame top. Gate mir kein's a flint.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold. This week, we have my interview with the very young and very talented and very successful chef, Eitan Bernath, who has a new cookbook out. You'll hear all about it. It's great. And if you're kosher, all the recipes are kosher. Okay? Oh. Something was on my bell, so I'm redoing it. Okay. So I figured, you know, this will be a nice interview after a really another horrible week of bad politics, lawmaking, and racism and anti-Semitism and homophobia. Anyway, so that's that. And if you are in Connecticut or near Connecticut, I'll be in Norwalk June 2nd with Jessica Curson. I'm also working in Provincetown. I just want to put that out in the beginning of the show because I know how your attention spans are. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my interview with Eitan Bernath.
Hi!
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited today on Kill Me. First of all, you're not my youngest podcast guest. So I just want to say that, but you're maybe my second youngest. I'm going to go with second youngest. Ladies and gentlemen, today, this is exciting because, you know, I love delving into people's lives. First of all, happy birthday to our guest.
Thank you.
You know, it's just very interesting how much this person has accomplished in the mere 21 years.
20.
Oh, I thought it was 21 because I kept saying, oh, because they're like, oh, he's 20. 20. 20 years he's been on the earth. 20 years ago, I was pregnant with my younger son, and I looked much younger. and I had a five-year-old, and this one, I can't take how much you have done. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Eitan Bernath is here. Woo!
Hello. I'm so excited to be chatting. Thank you for that incredible intro.
Okay, listen. Before we begin, Eitan has a new cookbook called Eitan Eats the World, and it's really great. It's really great. I love to cook, and I love that you dedicated it to your grandparents. And it's so beautifully shot. The recipes are amazing. Okay, and now we will be getting into your fucking amazing life. What the fuck?
Thank you.
Okay, so, Eitan, we have a lot in common. A, Jews.
Yes.
B, well, I grew up kosher, and I was kosher for a very long time, and now I cheat. So we're both very Jewy. I have a lot of phlegm today because I just had cereal with whole milk, ooh, chia seeds, and blueberries.
Ooh, yes, that is phlegm producing.
Right, but don't you think whole milk is better for you than, like, I mean, first of all, it tastes better. I guess after a certain age, you're not supposed to drink milk, but do you drink milk?
I grew up lactose intolerant.
My God, this Jew...
So I actually don't enjoy drinking cow's milk because I never had it growing up, and then once I got over the allergy, it just didn't really appeal to me. So I'm not
really... What kind of milk do you drink? Like,
I'm not a big milk consumer in general, but when I do, usually like almond milk.
Ugh, gross. Okay. John, you are such a Jew. Little, I love you for. That's the Jew bell. Anything Jewish, I ring the bell. Okay.
So, I mean, as you should.
So you grew up in Teaneck. Jewish. Yeah. My only boyfriend I ever had was from Teaneck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was experimenting with heterosexuality. Didn't work out. Your mother, Sabrina. Your father, Jason. Juju. Your brother, Yoni, who I don't know... I feel so sorry for him that he's your younger brother and has to deal with, you know, your incredible, incredible success. It must be hard for him, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, Yoni, my little brother, he is my biggest fan and also my biggest critic, as a
right.
younger brother should
of course.
Be. You know, I always say that Yoni keeps me humble, but he's, aside from all the jokes that we love to make at each other, he's super supportive. And, you know, definitely, obviously, there's a lot of challenges that come with being my brother. But, you know, I think he's really, you know, learned to live with them and learned to embrace them. And, you know, if people mention, a lot of times people are like, oh, are you Eitan Bernath's brother? He'll be like, no, I don't know.
Oh, I love you, Yoni. I know what it's like to be the youngest of two people who, you know, got perfect grades and did, but you know what? The youngest, we have the best personality. So I know have a good personality, but Yoni's going to make it big.
Yeah, Yoni, I would say Yoni's the cooler Bernath brother, in my opinion.
Okay. So, and you were very close with your grandpa, Larry, and you are close with your grandma, Linda. And you went now, so you grew up in Teaneck. Your mother's, okay, I can't, the bell is going to just, I'm just doing a few bells now to make up for that. I can't ring the bell 100 times every time I talk to you. Okay. So your mother's a math teacher. That is interesting because there are not a lot of female math teachers.
Yes. Yes. So my mom's also the head of the math department.
Love you, Sabrina.
The high school that I went to.
So at the, now, so you went to, wait, don't say it. Yavne Academy.
Yes, for elementary school and the first school for...
For high school.
Yeah.
So your mother was the head of the math department.
Yes.
And your father...
occupational therapist.
Was an OT for kids, right?
Yes.
Like, you're already coming from Giverman family.
Yes.
Now, where did your grandparents grow up?
Grow up. So on my dad's side of the family, my grandpa Larry and grandma Linda are both from like the New York area.
Okay.
My grandma Linda currently lives in Fairlawn, where she lived with my grandfather and where my dad grew up. And my mom's mom is from New York also, but they lived in Florida for a little bit. But a lot of the New York area, mostly.
Right. Okay. So you're East Coast Jews.
Yeah, very much.
As a young child, before you discovered food and cooking, what were your hobbies? What were you like?
It's a good question. I was a very picky eater.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
I just would basically just eat carbohydrates. It was my favorite food group. And honestly, still is, but I eat other things as well.
I mean, is there anything better than a carb?
No.
I mean, seriously, my profile on Twitter is I love challah. I just want you to know that. Okay.
As it should be. So, I mean, growing up, I was very picky. I never really loved sports a lot, which most of my peers right. were doing.
Does Yoni love sports?
Honestly, not really either. Not that much.
Wow. Okay.
We weren't that much of a sporty family. But I really love, food. And, growing up, I would, there's so many pictures of me. A lot of my baby pictures are really me in the fridge or in the cabinets.
Right, right.
I just always loved food and, watching Food Network. And I was just, I think growing up, and I'm going to the bell is about to ring, growing up in a Jewish family, food is such a central part of life. And I think for me, when I look back at my life and, it's part of what I tell in 8 Nights World, I think all of the greatest memories I have are right. with food. The book's dedicated to my grandpa Larry and loving memory of him. And, I think when I look back at my memories with him, the most prominent memories are around food. And I think, for me, well, yes, it's funny if you told my parents I was 2 years old before I was a teenager. What do you call that between toddler and teenager?
Child?
Yes. Let's see. Yeah. When
right.
I was a child.
So you have toddler, child, preteen.
Oh, preteen.
Yes, preteen.
Yes, preteen is it. And I would say during those years, I was a very picky eater. If you had told my parents I'd be working in food one day, they would not believe you.
But your mother cooked, right? Your mother cooked. She was a very Jewy cook.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting, because I grew up kosher, and, I grew up in, I was born in 62. I know I look fabulous. And probably way older than your parents, which is so annoying. But, I grew up in a kosher home, and the food, and I was just telling my kids this, that, for Passovers, there weren't specialty stores that with kosher food. I mean, it was torture for 8 days. And we had nothing. Now there's all these gourmet kosher, shops. So the one thing I think also, so I grew up kosher, and then every Sunday was when we went out to dinner. And you had the same thing, that you would go out to dinner on Sundays with your family. But when your mother was cooking, and I, again, that whole idea of memories, our religion is so food-based, don't you think?
Yeah. We love food.
Right. And even for each holiday, we have food that's either shaped for something, or we have rules about what we can and cannot eat. And a lot of our holidays are, most of them are around a large table with family talking and eating. So I think food is, and you learn about the world through food.
Yes,
and everyone's recipes, since we've been kicked out of every country, you get this spice from that country. And, my family came through here. So there's that spice and that. Right. So you're this very, so you're going to yeshiva, correct?
Yes, I went to the first school. It's a co-ed non-Orthodox yeshiva.
And everyone is the same, right?
Yes. Everyone looks very similar.
Right. Do you feel like you were, I mean, here you are, your mother, you're Jewy Jew, is growing up in that environment of like-minded and, just same sort of values and stuff. Do you think you, as you make your way through this huge world, do you think that you missed out on anything?
I think that's a good question. I think that, yeah, I definitely grew up in more of kind of a sheltered community. I mean, I think, My parents very much like exposed us, I think a lot more than even some of my peers necessarily got to the outside world. And, you know, kind of like you said, my parents, you know, being both educators, really used food as a vehicle to teach us about the world around us. And I think that, you know, something that was instilled at a young age in me is also, you know, just the concept of really like caring about the world around you. And I think,
well, that tikkun olam, exactly, which is one of the tenets of our religion, heal the world. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that, so, but I think, you know, in order to care about everyone in the world, you need to learn about them.
Right.
And, you know, I think food for me has always been that way that, you know, I've really enjoyed to learn about the world. And, you know, I think that in a way, I think, you know, being in such more of a tight knit community where everyone kind of looks the same and does the same traditions, everything, I think honestly probably really sparked my creativity a lot about learning about other religions and cuisines and cultures. You know, I think for me, what I loved, you know, I would used to watch, and I still do, I don't have as much time right now to do it, but I was younger. I would just watch hours and hours and hours of documentaries.
Yes, I read that. Yeah, about food.
I love documentaries. And, you know, for me, like, I don't want to just know how to cook a dish from South India. I want to know every little why they grow those vegetables there.
Right.
You know, what are the religious or cultural traditions? You know, why do they use these spices? Where do they get the spices from? You know, what are their practices that they do? Who's cooking this food? Where are they cooking the food? And so for me, I think honestly, you know, growing up in a community where it's like, okay, everyone kind of looks the same. I mean, I did up until, so where I lived was a little bit further off from where most people lived. And I actually grew up on a block with a lot of Indian and Pakistani families. And actually my closest friend my whole life, who's like a sister to me, is my friend Hiba, who's my next door neighbor. And so I also grew up in her house a lot. She was a Muslim Indian.
Oh, that's great. That's so great.
And so, yeah, I think in a way it honestly made me more curious to learn about the world around me because I wasn't, you know, going to like a public school where there's, you know, people of other, you know, races and religions and backgrounds. You know, everyone that went to my school, 99% of people were other Ashkenazi Jews.
Right.
And so I think that if anything, it kind of sparked my interest even more because I was like, okay, like, I know what everyone here's story is. And I think it made me fascinated to learn, you know, what they do in India, what they do in Mexico, what they do in Italy. So in a way, I think, sometimes I think if I was had a more kind of normal upbringing that I maybe wouldn't, almost like
without, more scattered, or
yeah, it would have just been less intriguing. Whereas for me, it was like, okay, I want to learn about this.
Do you think you're an anomaly in that way?
I don't know. I mean, I think that obviously, you know, I think not everyone has the level of interest I do in it.
Right.
But yeah.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
You know, when you talk about food the way you're talking about food, right? It reminds me of being an English major, right? So you go to the etymology of the word and, you know, and you're saying, wow, you're taking like a recipe or a piece of food is a novel and a book. And I want to know everything about it, all the research and everything that went into it. And I love that. And I love, you know, documentaries the best. So when you went out on Sunday night with your families, with your family for dinner, which we did the same thing every Sunday night, did you go to kosher restaurants?
Yeah, kosher and sometimes like vegan. But yeah, we would, I mean, growing up in Bergen County, there's so many restaurants. So there's always places to try. And also living near the city, I mean, you have access to the whole world, basically.
You know, we would go out and my mother was so kosher, like she would not cheat. And, you know, and we would go to like the diner, but it was like, I'm going to have a tuna fish sandwich. No butter, no this, like nothing could touch, you know. And so we have this joke in my family that there was one like Asian Chinese restaurant in our town. And my sister said to me recently, actually, you know, I didn't even know there was anything other than vegetable chow mein until I was like 35 years old. I mean, we didn't, but we went out, but we, you know, we'd get eggplant parmesan or, you know, so. Okay. So you grow up and you get this, which is so interesting that you're a picky eater and yet you're so fascinated by food. I find that trajectory so fascinating that because in a way, when you were a picky eater, you were also obsessed with food in one way and you sort of shifted it and turned it to say, hey, I gotta figure this out. Do you know what snapped in your head where you were like, I want to try everything or I want to, you know, learn about everything?
Yeah. I mean, it honestly kind of, I'd say a very slow progression.
Really?
You know, a very common story in A Ton Eats the World. And I can give one as an example.
That's a good book, everyone.
Like this recipe got me to eat this food.
Right.
And so, you know, I think at the crux of it, you know, being that I was a picky eater growing up, I think I really understand that. I genuinely do believe that for the overwhelming majority of foods that you think you don't like, you just haven't had it cooked in a way that
the right way.
So, you know, I think a great example of this is the seared Brussels sprouts recipe. In A Ton Eats the World, it's seared Brussels sprouts with chili Dijon pan sauce. And I can actually read you just one of the first two lines of the head note. And this is honestly a very common story in the book. It says, I have my friend Rachel Dolphy to thank for this one. After I spent a lifetime hating Brussels sprouts, Rachel cooked them for me once and my mind was blown. For the first time ever, I not only liked Brussels sprouts, I loved them. Chances are, if you're reading this book and you also think you don't like Brussels sprouts, it's because you've never had them cooked to perfection either. Here and now, I'm telling you that this recipe will win over even the biggest Brussels sprout skeptics among us. And so I think that really kind of...
You know what? I love that.
That really speaks to my
Because I grew up the way I grew up, I hated Brussels sprouts because my mother did nothing with them. You know what I mean? And yeah, so that's so great. I love that because I love Brussels sprouts now and they're very popular. They're
delicious. Yeah, I think that's honestly like really, you know, the crux of my personal culinary journey was like, I definitely start out cooking more foods that like were carb focused,
right?
And things that were stuff I liked. But you know, as I was like, you know, getting older and trying like branching out, you know, I think part of it was that, you know, I mean, I started my career when I was 11 years old.
I know. I can't, first of all, I just want you to know, that I was also on Chopped. So we're going to discuss that. Yes. But it's so, first of all, I love the story in the book about how you went to this, you love Indian food. I love Indian food too. And you went and there was a Northern Indian restaurant. And then you went to a Southern Indian restaurant and you're like, where's the bread? I need the bread. That, and you realized, oh, because even though it's the same country, because of the agriculture, because of, you know, what is available, they had rice. And I love that story of a little kid realizing, oh, it's, just, but no one else thinks like that at that age. You're out of your mind. You're so smart. Okay. So you're 11 years old. And I love that you often say that you're obsessive, because I am too. And I think that when you are obsessed with something or you love something so much and you need to know everything about it, it makes you so much better at your craft. So you said that when you went out to dinner with your parents, you would order a different dish every time, or they would encourage you to order a different dish every time. Now, my kids make fun of me because we'll go to the diner and I'll ask for the menu. And they're like, Mommy, you've seen this menu 4,000 times and you're going to take an hour to order the same thing that you order every time. I am resistant to ordering. Like if I like something, like I love tikka masala.
Mm-hmm. It's in the book.
Is that an American version of an Indian American?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's definitely a dish that's a little bit debated. You know, I think the most common origin story that I've heard, but there's definitely a bunch out there, is that when the British Raj came back to the UK after colonizing India, they wanted to like cook a dish that would, they thought like represented the cuisine back in India.
Right, right.
You know, for example, like Madras curry powder, that's not Indian. That's British. The British invented that because it was I think, you know, for a lot of Indian chefs, you know, growing up, with a bunch of my neighbors, Indian and cooking with them, you know, and asking them questions about like curry powder, for example, you know, a lot of them laugh at the thought of curry powder. Cause you know, anyone who cooks Indian food knows that, you know, every single Indian dish has its own set of perfectly curated spices.
Right.
So the thought that one spice can encompass a whole cuisine is honestly almost offensive for a lot of cooks. But you know, I think kind of like the curry powder story, you know, it was a dish, you know, it really is kind of a combination of chicken tikka, which is the marinated chicken, typically in yogurt. I use coconut milk. And it is super flavorful marinated chicken that is then cooked usually in a tandoor oven. So you have that really intense heat. And then it's cooked in kind of like a butter chicken sauce in a butter tomato sauce or a makhani in Hindi. And so it's kind of a combination of two dishes. So it's not super traditional Indian cuisine, but it's basically the most popular Indian in quotes.
I know, because it's so delicious and it's saucy and we love sauce in this country.
We do.
And so whenever I go to an Indian restaurant, I order sag.
Oh, I love sag. Sag paneer, yeah.
Yeah, so we call it saggy tits paneer. and I order the chicken. I order lahsuni gobi. Oh, the cauliflower.
I love cauliflower.
Oh my God, it's so good. You have a recipe in here for garlic naan, which is amazing. So you're 11. And so you're getting into the, you know, your parents are encouraging you order something new. When you ordered something new, were you ever like, oh shit, I should have ordered?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think anytime you step out of your comfort zone, you're bound to not go well. But I think, you know, I think for me, in terms of trying new foods, it's all like, you got to just try it. I think, you know, growing up, there were so many years of my life, I didn't eat all these foods that I now love.
Right.
And I think, you know, we really, again, are like, oh, I don't like this food. I'm not going to eat it. And I'm like, yes, you know, at the end of the day, like if you're spending money at a restaurant, you don't want to like spend $20 on a dish and then be like, well, I don't like this. But I do think if you're trying in an adventurous mood, you definitely should try new foods. And I think for me, you know, I think kind of an element that was kind of interesting is, you know, growing up, in also the public eye. You know, I mean, by the time I was 11, already being in the public eye and starting to create content, I actually think a lot of foods I started eating because I was creating food content, and I was like, at a point I was like, oh, I'm like running
out. You have to do this.
I know. I'm like, right. I'm like, in my personal life, like being a little kid, like obviously whatever, you can eat enough fruits. I'm like, this is my job. I need to make all these recipes, and I was enjoying doing it. I was like, all right, like 8 times time to like gear up. You think you don't like these things?
Right,
you
gotta try them.
And so honestly, I think, you know, in a weird way, you know, the start of my career in creating recipes and content, you know, I've been publishing a recipe on my website every week for the past 8 years. And, you know, I think for me, it was also almost like pushing me, like, okay, got to keep trying new foods. Like,
right.
I'm telling this story of growing up, you know, and learning about the world of cooking and food.
And other cultures,
And there's more, I'm running out of foods that I know. And I'm like, all right, I got to go to more restaurants, try more foods, research more, everything. And so it was this kind of cool thing of that, you know, my career in the culinary space actually very much expanded my repertoire.
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it, and it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV, and I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
So you're 11 and you go on Chopped and you loved Guy Fieri. Now, yes. I'm just full disclosure, I did Rachel versus Guy and I did Chopped All Stars. Now, I'm just going to tell people always ask me, what's it like to be on Chopped? First of all, I have to tell you my Chopped story, and then we'll go into your Chopped story because I think you'll love it. So I'm on Chopped with Layla Ali, Muhammad Ali's daughter, who brought her own knives. What's his name? Johnny Weir, the ice skater.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Fatone from the Backstreet Boy. And by the way, I just want to say, like, a few weeks before I went on Chopped, it was Easter Sunday, and my mother, God rest her soul, calls me from the Hebrew Home for the Aged and says to me, don't visit me today. I don't want you coming, which meant please come visit me today.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't need you. I don't want you coming. I said, Mom, I can't come anyway. Good, because I don't want you to come. Okay. So so then my neighbor comes over and annoys me. And then my kids are like, can we have eggs with avocado? And then I realized my neighbor came over and took the avocado. And I was so aggravated between my mother and my neighbor and the kids that I took the avocado that I had left and I took my knife and I went to get the pit out and I did it the wrong way. It slipped and I cut my hand. I cut a nerve. I couldn't feel anything. And I'm like, I can't feel anything. I have to go. I had to have two surgeries on my hand. So I had had surgery and I have still to this day, it's all tingly, weird feeling in here. And I play piano, so it's really annoying. Anyway, so I had a disadvantage. Whatever. I go on Chopped and the first, now, you know, you're on Chopped Junior. They have the basket. And so the first basket is chicken breast, vanilla cupcake, Gochujang, the Koreans.
Gochujang, yeah.
All right. You, of course, you know how to say it. All right. And then and avocado. So I make a guacamole with the kajajaja. And I grilled the chicken breast. I seasoned it, everything. And then I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about the cupcake. So I decided to make like a crust for the chicken with the cupcake. Anyway, I put it on my plate. Meanwhile, Johnny Weir, who doesn't know how to cook, doesn't even season his chicken. The plate looks gorgeous. He has a flower here. You know, it's just beautiful. It's just like a work of art. And then Layla, you know, and Joey owned a restaurant. It was just like ridiculous. And Layla, all right. So then, you know how you have to stand there while they're eating it?
Oh, that's the best part.
Okay. It's like 3 hours. Anyway, we're standing there and then they're like, oh, your chicken is delicious and the guacamole is delicious. But of course it looked like shit on the plate because I'm a mother of two young kids and I don't care what it looks like. I just plop it on the plate. So anyway, even though my food tasted good, I got cut, right? Which is the most devastating. Like, I don't think people understand. It's like someone sticking a knife in your heart. You're standing there you just want to cry. And then I have to go in the back room and like, yeah, blah, whatever. Yeah, it was really hard, blah, blah, blah. And in the next basket for the entree, it was a bunch of things. And the last thing was matzah. And I was so...
That's anti-Semitic.
I know. So obviously they thought I was going to... Matzah, by the way. They thought I was going to go into the next round. No one knew what to do. I was going to make matzah brie. I was like, oh my God, I could have made matzah brie and totally went to the dessert. But anyway, so I lost. So you went on. First of all, thank you for wearing a yarmulke on Chopped Junior. For all the Jews that are out there, that it's, you were so cute. You went on. Can you tell us about your experience? First of all, you loved Guy. Right.
Yes, I love Guy Fieri. I was actually on regular Chopped. It was actually before Chopped Junior existed. My episode was actually like a test run.
Because it says in one place I read just Chopped and the other one said Chopped Junior.
Yeah, a lot of articles always write Chopped Junior. But yeah, I mean, it was, I auditioned just on a total whim. I mean, it was just fun to fill out a questionnaire about cooking.
Right.
I think it was actually on Yeshiva Week, which is like the break that all the Jewish schools go on.
Yes.
And my mom needed an activity for me. And so I filled out this like 20 question thing about cooking. Never thought I'd get on. And then I did. I too got out in the first round. So I know that feeling all too well. But
isn't it the worst?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
I wonder what it was like for someone so young. Like for me, I'm like, oh, I've been through everything. I'm a comic. Like I'm so used to being humiliated and feeling defeated and just. And I was like, oh, because you feel as a stand-up, you feel like you can handle anything. That's why I think Zelensky is such a hero in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You know, you put up with so much stuff. And one of the reasons, he's also brilliant. But I wonder what it's like to be disappointed like that. Is it less because you're like, I have my whole life ahead of me? Or what did it feel like?
Not going to lie, it did feel like the end of the world. I remember there was a moment, that, you know, it was, I don't know, where did they film Chopped when you were on?
It was in a studio, but it was at that 14th
Kelsey
Street.
Market?
Yes.
Great. So, yeah, that's where they filmed Vinyl. So not going to lie, there was a moment I remember we walked, once we were done with all the interviews and everything, where we walked out and we were like about five steps from, with my mom, five steps out of the door of Chelsea Market, and I collapsed on the floor sobbing.
Oh, poor baby.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember then at the viewing party, I was like very much shitting myself. And yeah, it was hard, but I think that, you know, I very quickly realized that I could turn this loss into a win. And, you know, I would say like, you know,
what
even
did
though
your mother say to you when you were crying?
Not gonna lie, I don't remember. If I can just
okay, that's
honest,
fine.
I don't
that's
remember.
Fine. Okay.
I always joke that I have the memory of an old Jewish man already. I've had it checked out. I went to like a neurologist and everything. I just have a bad memory. And I think that, you know, it sounds cheesy, but like I really am grateful that, you know, I was able to turn this loss into like the biggest win possible. And I think that obviously, you know, being on Chopped is not the most relatable thing on earth. Not everyone's on there, but I think, you know, it's something that I've really tried to carry with me. And I try to, when people ask me about like what it's been like doing this, is that, you know, like I really do believe that, and it sounds extremely cheesy and like I'm reading this off like a postcard, but like it's really not about how you fall, it's about if whether or not
you get back up. Absolutely.
And because like if you know, and it sounds so cheesy always saying this, but it's so true. Like if you look at everyone who's successful, it's not the people that won hugely, it's the people or the people that never failed. It's the people that were able to get up from their fall.
Right, because you need to have that skill. You know, that's why I always think it's a curse to win The Voice. It's the people that, you know, because then they own you and you're like, oh, and it's the other people. You're like, oh my God, that person's so talented. And they get to have freedom. You have freedom. What was it like, you know, after the Chopped was on, you go back to school. Were you worried about that at that point? Oh my God, I'm going to go back to school and everyone's going to be like, you know, I got bullied so much growing up, and I don't know if there's bullying in yeshiva.
I mean, I definitely got made fun of, I think, throughout my life. And I think kind of, you know, when you post things on social media, you're putting yourself out there, you're bound to get
right.
made fun of. But, you know, doing that in middle school and then high school is definitely a different challenge. And so, you know, definitely, I mean, I think I grew a thick skin very quickly, you know, whether it was online or in school.
Right,
People were, I mean, obviously people were supportive, but like people were also, if I'm going to be honest, very mean about it. But I think that, you know, for me, I grew a thick skin very quickly, which, you know, I mean to tell you, is very important in this industry.
Oh, you're not kidding.
And I think that it was honestly a lesson that I'm really grateful that I learned at such a young age, because, you know, especially now, you know, in 2021, my videos reached over 300 billion. That would be intergalactic, 300 million individuals across the world. And, you know, I think the thing that I always say is the number one indicator of success in specifically entertainment, but in a lot of areas, is if people are hating on you. You know, if you're worthy of people spending their time to comment negatively on, that means you're doing something. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, if you're doing something that's actually, you know, new and different and, you know, breaking through some barrier,
right,
that barrier is there for a reason. There's people that, you know, don't want it to happen.
What are you, 100 years old? I can't with you.
No, not quite.
You're like a rabbi. I can't take it. Oh, by the way, you couldn't eat the food on Chopped, right?
Yes, I cannot eat the food on Chopped. And that was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. Also, I faced a similar thing. So you couldn't eat the food. The kitchen isn't kosher on Chopped. I did this thing. I can't believe, well, thank God my mother's not here to hear it. But I did this thing. They asked me to be on this thing for the Food Network, which was a roast. They were like, you're going to go to the Friars Club. Gilbert was on it. Oh, it was so fun. And we're going to go to the Friars Club And all these contestants on like America's Next Best, whatever, had to make a roast, right? And I get there and the ingredient is pork.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God, what do I do? So then I decide I did this. I was like freaking out. And then I was like, okay, I'm playing a character who eats pork. Who eats pork? So I can't even tell you. First of all, I had nothing to compare it to, right? And I was like, all right, I'll just taste it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of good, whatever. And then my my cousin calls. Did I see you on the television eating? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hell.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Eitan Bernath. And go cook something. Go cook something yummy. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast would not be possible without the help and talents and brain of Brittany Jo Sowards. And wish her a get well because she has the COVID. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave a review. Seriously, like, you know this show is great. Just leave a review and give me 5 stars. And then, you know, and then it'll be more successful. Also, now is a perfect time to purchase my book, Yes, I Can Say That, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble, which you can get at my website, judygold.com. We're having some free speech issues going on in the country. I don't know. A lot of shit going on in the country right now. And I have to say that it sucks. And I am, you know, really disappointed in a lot of the people in this great country of ours who are fucking dumb. Anyway, yeah, so, and keep your hand off my body. Now, no one's really has their hands on my body except for Elisa, but, and my massage therapist and sometimes my trainer, but, oh, my trainer's not Jewish, but whatever. He has a gay twin brother, so that counts for being Jewish. Yeah, so it's just, it's a lot going on. So I hope you're enjoying my podcast and it's getting your mind off of all the fucking shit going on in this country. So I want you to take care of yourselves. Do something nice for someone. And seriously, protest and fight and fight and protest. So important. June 2nd, I'll be at the Wall Street Theater with the great Jessica Kirsten. June 11th, I'll be at Montclair Pride in New Jersey. And in between all that and after that and during that, I'll be at the Art House in Provincetown, Massachusetts. So come see me, come laugh, go hear a comedian, but make sure it's me. And thank you for listening. Whoever you are, listening till the end, thank you. And as we always say, so long!